I'm Maria Vasquez Boyd, and you're listening to ArtSpeak Radio on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. We have a terrific guest list today. We're going to start off with an interview with Jennifer Chenoweth, a visual artist and entrepreneur who lives in Austin, Texas. Also in the studio, we have dancer, choreographer Jane Gotch, along with chef Craig McAllister, to talk about Let It Fall, a new dance work that will be performed here. And then following Jane, we have Ken Beeney and Dan Free. Ken Beeney is an artist, painter, and he'll be showing at Dan Free's gallery, the Trap Gallery, at 525 Gillis here in Kansas City, Missouri. So let's get started. Let me make sure that our friend Jen is...
Boop, boop, boop. Hello.
Hi, Jen. Jennifer Chenoweth. She is a visual artist and entrepreneur. She is the principal of Pastera Studio, and she creates contemporary abstract paintings and sculptures. Chenoweth studied painting and sculpture here at the Kansas City Art Institute. She has a master's degree from the Grade Books program at St. John's College in Santa Fe, and holds an MFA in painting from the University of Texas at Austin. And she's also the owner and artist at her studio, FasteraStudio.com. She's going to talk about her unique mixed-media installation called The Hedonic Map of Austin, which she exhibited at CoLab Projects in 2013 and at the University of Texas. So welcome, Jen. We have a lot to talk about.
We do. Thank you for having me on your show today.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I want to talk about the first thing, the Hedonic Map of Austin. And that was it's an interactive public art about the collective experiences there in Austin. It is a crowdsourced multimedia project which allows people to share stories in locations where they have significant experiences. Tell us how that was inspired by the Wheel of Emotion.
Well, in the 1970s, there was a psychologist named Robert Plutchik, and he came up with an interactive chart of emotions where you needed all your emotional experiences and feelings to be a whole person. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just about seeking pleasure or hedonism, mm-hmm. But it was about the kind of understanding the interrelatedness of positive and negative, or how grief... The experience of grief allows you to also, on the flip side, experience true joy. Mm. And so it's the beginning tool of allowing all feelings and acceptance in terms of emotional wholeness. Mm. And I can read books about that. I can talk to people about that. But when I saw it as a color chart, like a color spectrum, which one of his followers assigned his word chart, which had names of emotions, to a color spectrum, I was like, oh, I get it. Yeah, I'm a visual learner. I have to see it that way. And so I kind of drew out the spectrum more and created a Venn diagram around it as a graphic to try and describe the visual inspiration of the project.
And some of the emotions that you dealt with were anger and fear. The eight emotions were anger, fear, sadness, disgust, surprise, anticipation, trust, and joy, right?
Correct.
Now,
there's kind of an intensity level. So those are the big everyday feelings, and the most intense versions of each of those are on this chart, and they're close. For example, the more intense version of fear would be terror, or the more intense version of anticipation would be vigilance. So there's kind of a degree spectrum on there, too.
And would you also be dealing then with the flip side of that, sort of the counterbalance to anger?
Correct. The counterbalance to anger is fear on his chart, and the counterbalance to sadness would be joy, and that all four of those kind of work together to create kind of a balance of positive and negative emotions. And interestingly, it isn't like the positive emotions are all on one side of it and the negative are on the other. surprise and amazement are sandwiched in between fear and sadness.
Yeah.
So it kind of, when you think about how you kind of need one thing to feel another, and that they're all interconnected flavors, kind of, but with distinct characteristics like our colors.
Mm-hmm.
That was a good way for me to understand that.
Absolutely. And as you moved forward with this project, with the idea, you began to you began with a survey that
Correct.
You asked people to answer. And talk about that.
So we came up with 20 questions, we being some friends and who are writers. It's a very collaborative art project that has to do with a lot of different experts in different areas, from GIS to psychology. And so I am fortunate to have a lot of friends who are experts in different things. And so when I hit a new opportunity for collaboration with this project, I reach out to them. So a bunch of different writers and editors helped me come up with a list of questions that were less academic and a little more provoking of answers.
Mm-hmm.
And there are 10 more positive question or emotion questions and 10 negative ones, from where do you go to reconnect with nature being a positive question, or where was it you were injured or assaulted being a negative one, or where did you feel utter disgust, or where have you laughed the hardest. So each of those are coded to a color and emotion on the chart, and then when people answer the questions to the survey, that gives you a location that gives you an X and a Y point, where we create a GIS point. And then if it's a positive emotion, it's a Z point up. And if it's a negative emotion, it's a Z point down. So we were able to create a collective GIS map using everyone's answers on the survey to create a map of our emotional highs and lows in Austin. So that's what the hedonic map of Austin is having answers to these questions, particularly in Austin.
And again, it's very interactive, so it's not just a one-person sort of project, but it involves the community. Now, once the survey was collected and all the responses, the responses collected from the participants and all that, there were the coordinates that were used, and talk about that and how that was recorded, and what was the next step from there?
Well, the survey is actually still open through the end of December this year, and we're doing a lot of different installations and events and participatory experiences so that people can kind of have many different ways in. You can take the survey on your computer, or you can show up to an event, or you can place a survey flag on a scale map of Austin on a field at a different event. And so when we originally opened the survey in August of 2013, when we got 40 responses, we started making point maps. And then for the first show at CoLab Projects in East Austin, we had 60 responses, which was just a couple months after the survey opened. And then we used that event to have interactive projects where people could answer the survey and put in information. And then at that show, we had our first iteration of the map. And anyone who does graphic design will know that there's a lot of different decisions you make in creating a map.
Mm-hmm.
So I collaborated with a GIS expert named Dave O'Donnell to create the first map, and that's the one we did in ArcGIS and ArcScene, and you can tilt it and see the highs and lows, or zoom in on it and see the detailed kind of dense areas in downtown Austin.
Mm-hmm.
But then when the survey closes at the end of this year, we'll have a bunch of different ways of representing the information and using that GIS data from all the participants in it.
Wow.
And additionally, people can put in a small story about their experience, and they're all anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we realized we had this really rich, intimate information from people about their experiences and feelings and kind of how their experiences kind of have made them.
Yeah.
And then so we're producing a book and a catalog, and we've got a temporary art installation program installing next week where we have location markers all around town and city parks to get more people to participate in the survey and to share some of the stories.
Well, and I do want to mention, sort of fast-forwarding, that there's also a sculpture that evolved out of this project, Dance of the Cosmos.
Yes, it was a really exciting project. So a friend had shown me a book on Tibetan art, and in it I saw a Tibetan lotus mandala, which is a three-dimensional opening and closing mandala, and I just got really excited about it. So it's like the emotional chart by Robert Plutchik crossed with the Tibetan map of the spiritual universe in 3D, and we created a 20-foot wide by 7 feet tall three-dimensional kind of diagram of emotional wholeness, and it's on exhibition at the Elizabeth May Museum and at the City of Austin. It's a park museum through spring of next year. And then it's been a really fun project because it's sponsored through the City of Austin and both the Cultural Arts Division and the Parks Department. And it's been really fun to see it open and close. It's solar powered. It's mechanical. And I'm trying to figure out how to design it to create it as a small tabletop version that's 3D printed so that more people could have access to it.
That sounds cool. And I'm talking to Jennifer Chenoweth, who's an artist and entrepreneur, and her website is fisterastudio.com. And you can also check out the project, xyzatlas.org, for some more information. And I believe you also have a YouTube video, right?
I do, and we're actually going to do a crowdfunding campaign this fall to kind of get some of these parts pre-sold so that we can produce the 3D and 2D digital art for people so that they can have their own version of it. But it's just funny because the hedonic map of Austin grew into being the XYZ Atlas because we started having conversations about how to take this project to other places and other cities. Mm-hmm. So we're in conversation with the cities of Bryan and College Station in Texas, and it might be the platonic map of Bryan and College Station or the something else map of Kansas City. So the XYZ Atlas would be a collection of the map in other places, and we'd like to produce a digital platform so that it was a 3D map of the world that you could answer your questions about anywhere you've been and create maps for yourself.
Awesome. Well, you know, it started off as an idea, and it's really sort of blossomed, so to speak. and it really involves the community. It influences the city and what that means to the residents. It creates a community's identity through a shared sense of place, right?
Yeah, and it's really fun, especially when people kind of show up and see some of our live mapping events or like get a piece of it or see the map and they're like really measuring their experiences compared to other people's experiences in a particular place on a map. It's fun.
And there's a buy-in, too. I mean, this is a part of who I am. I'm a part of this art. I'm a part of this project. And so that's got to be really exciting for people in the community.
I hope so. I love it. I think it's a blast to work on. And it's fun to see it grow. And people will say, you ought to do blah, blah, blah. And I think, oh, an awesome next iteration of this. Yeah, we'll add it to the list.
Well, Jennifer, we're running out of time. I know we had planned to talk about Generous Art, the project the organization that you founded. Can you say just a few things about that? And we'll have to have another conversation.
We will. I'll make it brief. Generous Art is an online gallery, and we sell artist inventory to raise money for artists and nonprofits. The artists get 50% of sales through our online gallery, the same they would as a commercial gallery. But then the buyer gets to pick which community nonprofit gets a 30% donation, and then Generous Art gets 20% donation to produce professional development workshops, events, and videos to promote our artists. So it's really exciting. We empower artists and we strengthen our communities.
You know, that's terrific. And you're doing some really great work there in Austin. Miss you back here in Kansas City, Jennifer.
Miss you too.
But for more information, generousart.org would be the website to take a look at that. And thank you, Jennifer, so much for talking with me. Please call in again and we'll have another discussion and we'll check back in with you.
Thank you so much.
You
appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We're going to take a real quick break, and then we'll be back with ArtSpeak Radio. You're listening to ArtSpeak Radio. I am Maria Vasquez-Boyd. Up next, we have guest Jane Gotch, who is a dancer, choreographer here in Kansas City. She's put together a new dance work, Let It Fall, that she created with Cameron N. Saunders, with performances by Leo Gaydon and Juliet Remmers, DJ Duncan, and Prince Lyons. Joining her in the studio is Chef Craig McAllister. We're going to find out how dance and food relate. Welcome, Jane.
Hi, thanks.
Hello, Craig.
How you doing?
Good. So, now, Let It Fall was performed in New York back in February of this year, right?
Correct.
And that was crazy because that was right in the middle of the big snowstorm, and I think you were the only performance on Broadway.
Of Broadway shut down on the night of our show, but and the subway shut down. But, yeah, we... our show kept going.
I love that. I love that. Now, the show Let It Fall will be performed here in Kansas City on Friday, August 28th.
21st, 22nd, 28th, and 29th.
Ah, okay. Somehow I missed that. But and that's going to be at St. Mark Hope and Peace Lutheran Church.
Correct.
At 3800 Troost. So seating is limited, so you want to make sure that, you know, you get there early. And with the early performance, a three-course pre-performance dinner is prepared by Chef Craig McAllister. So how did that come about? I mean, what made you kind of think, this is a good pairing, dance and food and pre-performance?
I actually heard about a venue in Philadelphia that was doing something similar, of inviting a guest chef to prepare a meal inspired and influenced by the performance that the audience would see that night. I think dining is also a very interesting communal experience, and having that pre-experience together as a community and then going to the performance would be an interesting way to influence the audience's perspective of themselves and each other.
Yeah, I think you're hitting on all the senses then. You know?
Exactly.
So that, to me, that makes sense. So what would we be, what can we expect as a pre-performance meal?
So I've taken kind of the idea of what you would classically eat before a performance opera or something. Some old world flavors, really classic kind of French and Italian ideas and concepts and dishes. Mm-hmm. And then I think some of that idea kind of speaks to some of the movement, and some of the examples that the Janes used in her choreography and used with Juliet. And then I've kind of, you know, to take some of maybe the more modern or contemporary idea of what Leo brings to the performance, I'm also using that to kind of introduce really contemporary flavors into the dish. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to pair, root beer with old world vegetables.
That's cool.
You know, do some takes on pretzels and peanut butter and jelly, and then kind of make that work into an almost an old world or old European, you know, kind of dining experience.
Wow. It's something for the senses again, right? Also with that, on the opening music, you'll have several different musicians from here perform.
There's a guest opening music act each night. Friday the 21st, we have Mark Sutherland. Saturday the 22nd, we have Sean Hansen. Friday the 28th, Mikhail Shapiro. And Saturday the 29th, we have Jeff Harshberger.
Yeah, he follows my program at 1 o'clock. So, you know, this is pretty an exciting time for you because I know when we spoke last time, you were talking about the movement and the dance and all that, and it was inspired by some of the dancers themselves.
Exactly.
So it's really collaborative and sort of ongoing. It's never a finished sort of work.
Well, this project has been in evolution for about 2 years. This is our fifth sort of round of performing, and so for each cycle of performance that we had the opportunity for, we would go back in, tweak, recreate, change the project. So each of the venues, their architecture, their space, location would influence this piece. But when it comes down to it, this piece, probably more than anything I've made in the past, could not be performed by a different set of performers. Mm-hmm. This piece is based on and about them.
Mm-hmm. Well, for more information, folks can go to janegotch.com and
or letitfall.brownpapertickets.com.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there's some beautiful photographs that I've seen in other spaces, and I think it might have been in New York. And so you say that sort of informs the work?
It informs me in that placing my movement choices and the dancers in front of different spaces mm-hmm. causes me to look at movement I've seen for 2 years now mm-hmm. in a completely different mm-hmm. way. Monday on our rehearsal, I had the dancers slightly move and add a little bit more space to one portion of the piece so that it would align under a certain part of the architecture in the space because mm-hmm. I thought it was more interesting and visually complete mm-hmm. in that place.
So this will your performance will play through till the end of August.
Yes.
Does it move on anywhere beyond?
Well,
I know you like I said, you've been in New York and all that.
I think that this is probably the last round of this piece. One of our dancers is moving to Taiwan in the spring, and I have some other projects on the stove to start working on.
Wow. So, again, that is the first performance will be the 21st?
This Friday, the 21st.
And that's going to be at St. Mark Hope and Peace Lutheran Church at 3800 Troost. Make sure that you get there early because seating is limited. So what other sort of, well, the dinners, the pre-dinners, will they be influenced by the pre-show, the pre-performance, or will you have a dinner each night of performance that will shift, or will it remain the same?
We're trying to keep the menus the same and kind of really translate the kind of from the piece that Jane's created. Mm-hmm. I've partnered up with one of the farmers from Cultivate KC, so we're getting a lot of our products from Juniper Gardens mm-hmm. over on the KCK side. And we've partnered up with
Doug Frost,
the local master sommelier, to help us with some wine pairing. So we've really tried to extend our ideas of how involved this project can really be with the community and for the guests mm-hmm. and diners. Mm-hmm. Really trying to heighten that mm-hmm. visceral experience mm-hmm. of not only what you see and experience from the piece, but really trying to stake our claim on what that experience can be when you come in the door mm-hmm. and get a chance to dine in the same space that the dancers are performing in later on in the evening.
Well, I know what I've read about the work itself, it's abstracted body lines and breakdance styling. And what else, Jane?
Operatic song.
Yeah. And that is performed by Juliet?
Juliet Remmers mm-hmm. and Leo Gaydon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then there's actually three other pieces, dance pieces being presented. Another solo I'm creating with Leo. And then I curated Cameron Saunders from St. Louis, who's a UMKC grad of the conservatory. He's presenting two pieces as well, a male duet and a solo.
So for people who have not been to a dance performance, what are your expectations? What do you think they'll learn? What do you think they'll come away with the performance for the evening? Well, other than a really good meal and,
Well, I love an aspect of our brain called mirror neurons. I actually created a piece with Mark Sutherland based mm-hmm. entirely on your mirror neurons. They allow you to feel empathy for somebody's emotional state, as well as if you see an artist or performer, say you watch a pianist play, that part of your brain will have the same reaction as if you were mm-hmm. actually mm-hmm. playing that piano. So I feel by watching dance, it connects you to your own body, your own physical experience of living in this skin. It's inspiring to see people achieve, particularly people that live and work in your community. Mm-hmm. And I hope that that's what they'll walk away from. I also am very excited that this project is taking place on Troost and bringing work from a really diverse palette of people mm-hmm. to that neighborhood. So I hope that they might walk away with something, a new perspective on a street in their city.
Absolutely. Well, I know, reading again from the description, the work unifies the artist's diverse personal histories into a lush
sensorial saunter
down the fine line. You're reading my lips. Between suffering and pleasure. So there is that emotional sort of connection that you're wanting to take place between the viewer and the dancers.
The piece is extremely physical. You see Leo sweat. You see mm-hmm. his muscles flex.
Mm-hmm.
You hear Juliet's voice resonate in the space. And I want you to feel like that. You feel that feeling in your own body.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's really powerful.
I hope it's possible.
Aside from this performance, are you going to take a little bit of a break and kind of figure out...
I will take a break of being spearheading a large project. I'm doing a residency at Missouri Bank the first Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday of November. And then I have a project with Sean Hansen that's sort of in the works. I'm also collaborating on a video project with Peregrine Honig that's mm-hmm. part of her Sweets project, Open at Belger, September 18th.
You've got a lot on your
plate. A lot going on.
No pun intended. And so Craig, how do you prepare for this? And what is this something fairly new for you that you've done this dinner, pre-performance dinner with an artist, with a choreographer?
This is definitely out of my comfort zone. As a chef, you kind of draw inspirations from your own experiences. You know, if that's eating at somebody else's restaurant, or you know, your travels, or just you know, the earth or the ground, or you know, so to take more of a visceral and visual art form, and then really sit down and try to pair that with what I'm comfortable with, mm-hmm. which is putting food and flavors on a plate. It was more of a challenge than I thought it was going to be. I mean, I'd watched videos several times, and I have colored pencils and long lists scattered all over my dining room table to really kind of make sure that the idea and the presentation that I was going for really comes across and the guests can really identify with the partnership that we're trying to do here.
So has this inspired you? Of course, you haven't really gone through it completely yet, but has this inspired you or given you any sort of thoughts about maybe some future sort of collaborations?
I would like to keep it, I would like to keep it going.
Sounds really cool.
It's always an excuse to buy more equipment for my house, too. Being a chef in Kansas City, I do a lot of work with the Lyric Opera and the ballet and some of the other, local charities and Arts Casey, some other luncheons as well. So, I like the idea of having, kind of a pulse on the community here in the city. And this has just been a way to kind of extend that and make it a little more personal.
Excellent. We've got just a few minutes left. You want to, did we get everything covered, Jane?
I think we did. It's going to be a beautiful night, and get your tickets early or arrive early to the door.
LetItFallBrownPaperTickets.com, and for more information about Jane, JaneGotch.com. Thank you so much, Jane Gotch.
Thanks, Maria.
Thank you, my friend, Craig McAllister.
Absolutely, chef. Thank you.
And we'll be right back with Art Speak after a brief moment. 90.1 FM invites you to White Noise, Embracing the Spirit, Sunday, September 13th from 1:30 to 6 p.m. at Belvoir Winery in Liberty, Missouri. This one-day retreat is for writers and poets, painters and photographers, and curious others to explore, write, and create on the grounds of one of the most haunted locations in the Midwest. For more information, call 816-931-8858 or visit kkfi.org.
The Green Party Presidential Candidate Forum, tonight at 6.
And we're back. This is Art Speak Radio. I'm Maria Vasquez-Boyd. Thank you, Jane Gotch and Chef McAllister. You know, we have so many people coming in and out of the studio, and we just love that because this community is just filled with really creative people. And so with that, I'm going to introduce our next guest. We have artist, photographer and gallery owner Dan Free here in the studio. And along with him, we have artist Ken Beeney here live on Art Speak Radio. Welcome, guys.
Hi, thank you.
Thank you for having us.
You know, Ken Beeney and I go back way back when. Were we ever married? No, not that's not true. No, but we were at the Art Institute at the same time back mm-hmm. in the early 90s. Now, Ken's work explores the expressive potential of the human figure in various scenarios and the narratives and dynamic created between the figure and ground relationship. Through figures and figure groups emerge from a continual layering of paint and glazes and the scraping and scratching into the surface, which reveal and embellish and enhance the image. So, Ken, with that, is it sort of like an archaeological dig in layers? How would you describe your work?
It becomes that way, I think, after a while. Some of the canvases I've been working on for months and over time, the layers of pigment add up to something very unpredictable. Now, to be fair, a lot of the paintings I'm doing or showing at the trap will be landscapes mm-hmm. as well as some figures. Mm-hmm. The landscapes are basically the same process. However, it's the motif and the subject matter may change, but mm-hmm. the process is what really drives the imagery.
And you recently had a body of work at the Late Show.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Now, has your work shifted? Has it changed direction since you were a student?
Oh, I'd say quite a bit, yeah. And it's probably shifted through many manifestations over the years.
Mm-hmm.
One constant, I think, has been painting, that I've always tried to stick to painting and mm-hmm. oil painting predominantly, mm-hmm. with forays into video or music here and there, but never with the same sort of seriousness that I approach painting.
Mm-hmm. And your paintings are fairly personal. I mean, in terms of the size, the size of your paintings aren't huge, but they're just very nice and...
Yeah, they're intimate.
Yeah.
Intimate. Or they're easel-sized paintings, easel. Maybe. I think that's as much of a result of not having a large studio mm-hmm. and working outside mm-hmm. quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the sort of... You know, you go through different... ways of working, and you're limited by just very practical realities.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so.
And I want to mention that photographer, gallery owner Dan Free is here with us. The Trap Gallery at 525 Gillis, you'll have an opening of Ken's work.
Absolutely, Friday night.
Yeah, and also what is coming up at the Trap, September 18th, Nicole Caulfield Photographs, and then one of your more popular exhibitions is Love Rust, October 16th. You get a number of people in the gallery, local artists in that.
Absolutely. I have it's local, regional. I've got artist this year who is actually, I believe, in the first Rush show. Her name is Alicia Eve Zook, and she is a photographer from Pennsylvania who also mm-hmm. shoots a lot of pictures of Rust. And so I recently, I think she had sent me some kind of promo email, and so I asked her if she wanted to be a part of the show this year.
So if our listeners are wanting more information, you can go to columbusparkart.com and find out a listing of exhibitions coming up. November 20th, you have Max Key
mm-hmm.
Paintings. So now your gallery openings are on the third Friday of the month, and why is that?
Well, I tried doing first Fridays for the first couple of years, but I couldn't compete with live bands in the street and fire jugglers and all that kind of stuff that goes on in the crossroads.
Yeah.
So I believe it was my third season. We just decided to pick another night mm-hmm. and. You know, third Friday kind of falls halfway in between first Fridays, mm-hmm. and so we started doing that.
You know, again, so Ken Beeney's work will be at the Trap Gallery, mm-hmm. and For more information about Ken's work, you can check out kennethbeanie.com, which is your website. How many images do you have that are more, that give a viewer a sort of a sampling of your work? I mean, you do more like abstract or landscape work or a little bit of both? What can they see on your website?
It's hard to describe, I think, verbally something like painting.
Sure.
A lot of my landscapes, I have been told, are very abstract, mm-hmm. Where people look at them and they say, "Oh, you're an abstract painter." Mm-hmm. And to me, they're very realistic or very mm-hmm. accurate mm-hmm. in some sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have to, I guess, accept the fact that my paintings come off as very abstract. They're mm-hmm. not necessarily detail-oriented. But I'm not sure that's abstract or, mm-hmm. or detail-oriented is something I'm necessarily striving for.
Well, I'm always struck by your sense of color.
Hmm.
You know, when I look at your work, there's really nothing muddy. It's very clear and concise, mm-hmm. you know, the colors that you use. Have you always had a good sense of color, or is it something that you sort of worked at through the years, or just had an inherent sensibility about that?
Yeah, I think it's intuitive to a large degree. One thing that I've started doing as a technical change that I think helped clarify was I quit using paint brushes and started mm-hmm. using only palette knives.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly because I was working outside and carrying thinners and solvents with me was burdensome. But the palette knife, you can wipe off, and it's mm-hmm. it's a very clean way to work. And
mm-hmm.
and I think that the colors then are more accurate due to that process.
Yeah, working outdoors, you know, people really don't like you to dump their your turpentine in their pond or, you know, on the ground.
It's frowned upon.
Yeah, well, batteries are okay. No, I'm just kidding. But, you know, we're going to take a real quick break for some underwriting. We'll be right back with Ken Beanie and Dan Free. And we're back. This is Art Speak Radio. I'm Maria Vasquez Boyd. Ken Beanie and Dan Free are in the studio. Hello, guys.
Hello.
So we were talking about your work, and First Fridays being open on the third Fridays, the Trap Gallery. What about First Fridays? Do you both sort of avoid, or do you participate in the citywide sort of First Fridays?
I like First Fridays. I love going down to the crossroads and just seeing the buzz, just mm-hmm. all the people. It's a really hard place to see art.
Hmm. Yeah.
Because there's all the people in the way. So I just go down there and look at people. But usually what I will do on First Fridays is I'll check and see what shows I'm interested in seeing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll go and I'll make an effort to, you know, really go see, you know, two or three shows that I really want to look at. And then the rest of the time I just hang out like everybody else.
Yeah, yeah. How about you, Ken?
I've been to a few, and I'm daunted by the crowds a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I tend to try to get to the galleries on off First Fridays.
Mm-hmm.
When you can actually see things.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, very different from when we were students. We're at the First Fridays, and I've said this many a time, so where the First Fridays were really for the artists. We would start off with a student gallery.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Head off to this show or that exhibit and then, you know, just have a conversation and lots of beer and, you know,
I think that was the time when they decided that the first Friday of the month was when the openings were going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it used to always be, you know, who's having a show? When's the show going to open?
Yeah.
And all this kind of stuff. And I back then it was, that was when somebody said First Friday.
Well, and the galleries were really different there too. You know, do you remember Random Ranch?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And I know you had one at one time.
Yeah, in the West Bottoms I had a gallery, the unofficial Nipsey Russell Gallery of Fine Art.
I love that.
Short-lived, but it was a good time.
And then there was Jan Weiner, right?
Mm-hmm.
She was on West Plaza.
Yeah. Just out of her house.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, out of their house, Tom Deverett.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yep.
Which he still has his gallery just east of the crossroads.
He's technically in the crowd.
Cherry, 16th and Cherry, I believe.
It's just the perimeter.
Very, very different time.
He's always been on the outskirts, anyway.
Hello, Tom. We love you. So, you know, Ken, you seem to have a large body of work over the years. Are you inspired by different times of the years or just whenever the opportunity hits? Because I know not only are you a painter, but you're also a father with a family that I think takes up a lot of time.
Right. I have a 7-year-old daughter, and she doesn't take up my time necessarily.
Sure.
It's always fun. But it's hard to make all the ends meet and work the day job and try to find time to paint. Seasonally, I go out and paint all year round. There's a painting in the show that was done in 14 degrees. Behind a liquor store is a great windbreak for me.
Mm-hmm.
You can go out, you know, just be prepared for it, and a flask of brandy, and you're good to go.
I was going to say, it's going for a break.
Well, I know there's certain times of the seasons that are just, you know, time is ripe for certain artists that, you know, the fall or the spring and all that. I didn't know if there was sort of, you know, a seasonal time when you just sort of shut down for the year and, you know, maybe work indoors.
I do more or less. I tend to paint from observation, from direct observation all the time. So when I paint indoors, I tend to go to a still life or more of a memory-driven type thing. I don't work from photographs, although I've tried many times.
Mm-hmm. Figurative work?
The figurative work is, again, it's I do a lot of figure drawing at least once a week. But the figurative work, again, is like the landscapes. They're very abstract. I see them as very figurative and figure ground oriented. Other people say they're just pure abstractions, which surprises me, but I'm starting to get over some of my shock.
Sure. Now, as a painter, do you have you ever found collaborations that you form that work for you that maybe kind of give you a different way of working?
Not really. I'm very much a solitary painter. The collaborations that I've worked on, they've always seemed derivative in one way or another, or never quite getting to the essence of what I think a painting can. So it's just not for me. I know a lot of people out in Lawrence, especially, are very sort of collaborative painters.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I'm just not a joiner, I guess.
Yeah.
Although I will say there's one painting in the show that is a collaboration.
That's true.
Talk about that.
I believe, I can't remember the title, something about a monster.
There's a painting in the show, it's called The Wild Beast.
The Wild Beast.
Which,
there's a good story behind this. Come on.
I was having a little trouble with the painting, and my daughter Fiona came in and was looking at it, and I said, I need a wild beast right about here. She says, okay, Dad. She drew a wild beast just perfect with a snake for a tail and bad ears and fangs. And, that's a collaborative piece that will be in the show.
Beautiful. Dan, you are a photographer. And I know that I've seen your work in the studio, in your gallery at times for Love Rust. And I have actually seen people go up to your photographs and touch the surface because they're convinced that you've got that, you know, that really scratchy, rusty kind of scrapiness on the wall.
It's been, and it's been that way ever since I was at the Art Institute. I had a show at the student gallery, and my artist statement was, "Exposed prints, please do not touch." That was my artist statement.
But people touched anyway.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I would.
You know, it's just, you know, you try to mitigate.
But is that a good or a bad thing? I mean, because, you know, I suppose that you want people to interact with your work, that you really want them to look.
I don't really mind when people go up in touch because you know, in a lot of ways, my photographs don't look like photographs.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I mean, some people say they're painterly. Some people think it's some sort of actual piece of metal hanging there on the wall. And so, you know, I mean, I like the illusionary quality that photography gives. And for people to go up and touch it and realize that it is flat and it is smooth, and I think kind of adds to, you know, the experience of the work.
And recently I've seen a very big piece of yours.
I have a big piece up downtown, part of the Art in the Loop project. It's on 11th Street between Main and Baltimore. It's attached to the outside of the Missouri Bank parking garage, and it's 5 feet tall by 34 feet long. I was very happy to get chosen to have that thing produced and displayed.
Well, congratulations!
Thank you.
What are some of the response that you know of that people have maybe commented, or have you heard anything? Any sort of feedback?
Most of the feedback that I've gotten on this piece was just from people that already know me and know my work. So I haven't really heard much from people who are new to the work. So I think they're going to do some walks where you walk around with the artists and discuss the pieces and things like that. So I think that'll be a good opportunity to hear some different points of view.
Sure. Now, with that, because it's public art, it's out there, do you worry about people sort of tagging your work or destroying it? I mean, there's sort of that element too of a little bit of
I mean,
anxiety.
It's you know, it's always a possibility. But well, for me, that's one of the good things about working in photography. Is I can always make another one.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Very good point. And you're strictly a photographer.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, obviously you go through art school, so you get a little taste of everything. Actually, I studied painting and graphic design and illustration before I came to the Art Institute, and that's when I switched to a photo major, and then I found Rust. And
yeah, been in love ever since.
Absolutely.
Again, we're talking to Dan Free, the gallery owner and photographer at the Trap Gallery at 525 Gillis, just in the Columbus Park area. And the website for more information is columbusparkart.com. Also, Ken Beeney, painter. KennethBeeney.com is the website. That have a lot of your work and past and present.
Periodically, yeah.
And you will have your opening this Friday.
Right.
What time will that take place?
6 to 10.
Third Fridays
right.
is when you're available. And your season runs April through November. So you're pretty much booked up for then, because September 18th, again, you have Nicole Caulfield. October 16th, Love Rust, and November 20th is Max Key. So, what about the following year? Are you kind of booked that far up ahead?
I'm talking to a couple of artists. I have a few of my months are sort of spoken for. In April, I usually turn the gallery over to an Art Institute senior to give them a space to have their senior thesis show. Just way of giving back to the kids.
Yeah.
And then May has, for the last several years, has been a Columbus Park group show. So I get all the artists in Columbus Park, or some of them, or whoever wants to do it, to show off the neighborhood talent. And then October is Rust. So I have like 5 months that I get to play with, five or 6 months. And so I've already been talking to a couple of artists about next year. I like to, you know, book pretty far in advance.
Sure. Yeah.
So that gives people time to, you know, make the work and think about it and put together a cohesive show. And it also, you know, keeps me from having to scramble at the last minute.
Yeah, that's not fun. How long has it been in that location?
My wife and I bought the building in 2001 in the spring and started having shows almost immediately, really, because there was a group called Art in Columbus Park. There was a group of neighbors that had turned a space across the street into a little impromptu pop-up gallery.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we moved in and we're talking to neighbors and they said, oh, we're going to have an art show. And I said, well, I got a space. I'll have an art show.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, and it just kept going. And they fell by the wayside and I'm still here. So.
Yeah, and the Columbus Park area is just a wonderful little tight-knit neighborhood. I know up the street is Happy Gilmore from...
Happy Gillis. Yes.
I like it, yeah. Yeah, and that's just right up the street from you all. And, and I know that you have street fairs every now and then, just depending
Block
on
Block parties, that kind of stuff. There's another gallery that just moved into the neighborhood called the Kiosk Gallery that I think used to be over on Broadway. Eric and Aaron Dodson are a married couple, and they run their little gallery at 916 East 5th. So it's roughly 5th and Harrison. So I was very excited that they decided to move their operation down to Columbus Park because now, you know, it's getting... We're trying to get a little bit more of a crawl thing going where you can come down and spend the evening. We have some neighbors across the street on Gillis Street. There's like three front porches in a row, so we're trying to get a thing going where the little pop-up porches, pop-up shops on the porch. B-Sweet Ice Cream Treats came by last month, and I think they're going to be here again on Friday. So,
well, see, I think the beauty of that neighborhood is that it's small and that, you know, there's room to move, and you can look at the art.
Yeah. Yep.
So, you know, we're winding down for this afternoon. Is there anything else that you want to mention that we haven't talked about?
I think we got it coming.
Well, you know, I want to thank you guys for the generous donation to the Art Institute. Which one of you gave the $25 million?
Yeah.
You know, was that crazy?
Let's talk about that.
That was crazy. You know, I just take a million, you know. I'm not that greedy. Well, thanks, guys, for coming in this afternoon. Come back anytime. Best of luck to you on your exhibition.
Thank you very much.
We'll be talking to you again soon, I'm sure.
Sounds good.
Very good. I want to thank all my guests today that shared their time and their energy and their gifts of talent and creativity. I want to thank Jennifer Chenoweth from Austin, Texas. Hope to see you soon, my friend. Dancer, choreographer Jane Gotch, and chef Craig McAllister, who is going to whip up a fantastic meal for you prior to the performance. Also, Dan Free and Ken Beeney, artists, gallery owners, and just really nice, talented man. Next week on the program, I've got Bruce Burstert. He is a artist, and he is a preservationist, so if you need some work done on restoring an old, he's your fella. Also, Casey Zine Khan will be here with Amos Mark and Adam Davidson. Also, artist Mark Allen, controversial, I should say. Mark Allen is an artist, and I believe he's recently moved to California. So that will be next week, August 26th, on ArtSpeak Radio. Stay tuned at 1 o'clock for Afternoon Jazz with Jeff Harshbarger. At 3 o'clock, Old G's Hangout with Groovy Grant. Then at 6 o'clock, we have All Souls Forum. 7 o'clock, American Roots. 9 o'clock, stay tuned for a classical challenge. And that will either be Dr. Mike or Mark Andrus. I'm never sure which of the two will arrive, but they'll be with you at 9 o'clock. Thank you all for tuning in and making KKFI a priority. Thank you so much for sharing your time with us. Be sure to like us on Facebook. And you know what? You can say it with me, honey. I'm coming home.